CrowPod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for everybody. Secondhand news here on the CrowPod for the 20th of September, and my God, do we have a lot to get to. Fuck me. Yeah, I kind of want to start out with one here, just more direct. Obviously, we're going to get to John Bennett, and we're going to get to some more fun stuff, but Brian Lauder up there in his regular column on the Mail, sometimes when we say stuff or somebody like us says something on Twitter, people kind of scoff, and usually kind of comes down to you guys are just bringing up criticisms for the sake of it. But Brian Lauder passed a lot of the same things, like, where's Matondo? When Matondo isn't on screen, everybody should be asking where Matondo is. And of course, this comes from the fact that, well, Gio said the reason that he wasn't on the bench for Dundee United was that he had to cut the squad from 23 for the Champions League down to 20, which would make sense if Matondo had not been the option off the bench against Napoli in said Champions League match. Again, I mean, it's just like, God, he just opens his mouth and stuff just falls out of it. That doesn't sync with what actually just happened, which, look, I'd be rattled too. I mean, if my best performance out of the past four was squeaking past the worst team in the league by miles at home. I mean, I'll give Lauder credit too here. He does give him some cover. I mean, after asking, well, where's Ben Davies? Where's Ridvan Yilmaz, right? Tillman is kind of dropping in and out, but to be fair, his form's kind of dropped in and out. Although, he's not a right wing. Don't know why we keep trying that one. I guess we do win matches now with Scott Arfield playing on the right wing. So, why the fuck not just shove whoever out there? But Lauder up here goes, was it buying so many players and then not using them raises some obvious questions. Have the club simply scouted poorly in some instances? Or did Van Bronckhorst, despite his positive words about the window, not get what he actually wanted? Did he have full control over who came in? Through his actions, the Ibrox manager is telling these players that they're either not good enough or not ready enough. Yes. That's it. We got 9 matches this month, this upcoming month after the international break here. Obviously, the schedule does not get any better between now and November. Yet, I'm sure, somehow we're going to hear that Ben Davies still needs fitness. He's not gotten minutes. We've been down 3-0 in matches and brought Steven Davis on to ping around perfectly weighted passes, as if that's somehow going to get us back into the match. I mean, the squad is not functioning as a squad. And I think Laudrup nailed it here perfectly. So that's the worry. And the longer it goes on, the more difficult it becomes. If a player can't get on the pitch or even the bench at home against a Dundee United team who are bottom of the league, then when will they? What a great question, Brian. That's the kind of questions that we need right there from Brian Lauder. Quick break here. We're coming right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Secondhand news back here on the CrowPod for the 20th of September. As always, please scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link, help us out, maybe win some stuff from the famous. It's real easy to do. I mean, even $3 helps out a lot with all the shit that I've had to buy recently to keep doing these. But John Bennett. Oh boy, John Bennett. Our deputy chairman came out today in an interview on RTV, and then it was on YouTube. And then the other part was on YouTube, and nobody really seemed to know or explain why. It's kind of funny, given how much, he talked about, we need to communicate better with the fans, but then we're going to make these random decisions about where to release stuff. I mean, knowing the people I know in the digital department, I would reckon they probably gave him the right advice, or the board or whoever the hell was ultimately making the decision on how to release this thing the right advice, and it was ignored. Bettin Penn at one point in the interview said he's annoyed at valid criticism or observations. Our communication with our fans has not been good enough. Let's fix that. Great job. Good start right here. You know, at one point, there was another point in here where he's talking about the fans. And let me get the quote here in my notebook. I was very struck by English Premier League fans and their reaction to certain clubs to that whole Super League stuff. Of course, the European Super League. That told the owners of those clubs who really owns the clubs. I'm a part owner of Rangers, but I'm every bit as much an owner of Rangers as a fan, a supporter, as I am somebody who happens to own some shares. Never will we take them for granted. I don't know. I mean, a lot of this was rambling, which is pretty bad when you're releasing something via club channels that at certain points you're just kind of running off into tangents or running yourself into cul-de-sacs. But to get back to that ESL point, again, that he was struck at their reactions to the whole Super League stuff. So why in the fuck did you and the rest of the board think that a friendly in Australia against them would be a good idea? None of this, you know, those don't really sync up, those concepts. Not very simpatico. Presumably, if you somehow learned a lesson from all this Super League shit, you might have maybe taken that into how we, you know, run Rangers. It's crazy. But of course, a lot of this kind of focused back to, people rightly so have been asking questions about the money and where the money's at and why we're not spending money and why the money that we have spent hasn't been utilized on the park, as we just talked about there with Brian Laudrup's comments. there's a lot to cut through. I picked out a few things here, but, you know, of course, he's talking about squad building, the fourth pillar. Yes, that infamous fourth pillar, if you don't remember from John Bennett, the AG. You know, again, this is a quote. Let's just read this here. Thing that strikes me when we get money falling out of the sky and unplanned windfalls, I haven't known them at Rangers, I'm afraid. I've known unplanned costs, I can tell you, and we would spend this entire interview itemizing that, as there's so many. But please do. But we'll get back to that. But unplanned, particularly when it comes to player trading, and I do want to talk about this, to imply that it's falling from heaven, it's so wrong. Very much part of the model. Let's go back to the AGM where I spoke about four pillars. What was the fourth pillar? And I said I wasn't yet standing. Maybe four pillars isn't the analogy and it's four cylinders and an engine. I don't know. But if an engine's going to work on four cylinders, you have to have all four firing. Player trading model wasn't up and running, wasn't up and firing. Here's the fact. You ready for this, folks? Here's the fact from the deputy chairman who's been there for how long now? Here's the fact. It's only been up and running, up and firing for months, and it's called January 2022 with the sale of young Nathan Patterson. Deputy chairman just told us that we've only had a player trading model in place for 7 months. How many years into this project are we? 7 months is how long we've had a player trading model. I mean, it obviously shows up because, you know, let's go look at some of these. I came up, but I want to say there's 15 or 16 players out of contract between now and the end of 2024. So the end of next season, 18 months. Ken Morales, of course, are the two big ones everybody knows about, although the board was out teasing that Alfredo Morales had signed a new contract, was more than happy to put that out amongst its many, many friends. That's obviously not the case. So there's two. The two Americans, James Sands and Malik Tillman, that's going to be around an 8 to 10 million pound outlay just to acquire him. There's no chance, or no guarantee, rather, that Tillman stays, because if he's actually doing well, obviously we could sign him from Bayern for that roughly 6 million fee that's been bandied about, although they have a buyback clause, which, and if he's playing that well, they'll immediately use. Good profit, although again, where the hell do we actually use that money at, right? You got nine other squad members. Among them, of course, the three that were given contracts in the summer, none of whom would have been pursued by any other club in the Champions League. Although we're now back relying on a 40-year-old goalkeeper. Again, short-sighted planning. Well, but hey, John told us the player trading model was not in place until January 2022. So I guess we couldn't really expect anything else than still relying on Alan McGregor in 2022. The other three leave, of course, Haji, who will be back sometime after the 2026 World Cup. Leon King and Robbie McCrory, who got a Scotland call-up and who is miles away from the squad and hit Rangers. That's not good when your deputy chairman, because of course, well, you know, the chairman not available. I mean, he's got photo ops to worry about. God forbid. I mean, I'm kind of curious how many Myers points you have in order to see the interview with him. But you're telling us that there wasn't a player trading model in place, which means none of this groundwork or anything was laid out until 7 months ago. And this is the state of our squad. Again, if we had a director of football and a managing director, this is their part of the business. Because, again, I mean, of course, Bennett told us everything's great with sponsorships and all the kind of revenue that comes off of Bisgrove's side. So let's not even worry about that one for today. Let's worry about this part here. The managing director and the director of football did not have in place a player trading model until the middle of the last season. Again, that's a failure. And you can't just come out and say this kind of stuff in the midst of an interview where you lament the lack of communication to fans and how you guys have gone about doing some of this stuff. You can't come out and say this kind of stuff in an interview and then not expect us to take that and look at it and go, well, then what the fuck is wrong with this? That's bad. That's very poor. And now you have just said it. You've communicated it to us. There's some other numbers in here. He talks about $23 million on capital expenditure over 2 years, which is just an unfucking believable number. But let's put that out. So you've got Edmonton House, which is now somewhere around $5 to $6 million over budget, right? I God help me, I have no idea what the operating costs. I mean, are they going to be expecting people to spend 50 to 75 pounds a ticket to get in there? £5 to £6 million over budget. Of course, we didn't sell the Albion, so there's £3 million that they had planned on. And I don't know, let's give them credit for $2 to $3 million in rising costs, I guess, over the course of COVID and this inflation-driven period. So that leaves £11 million that no one at the club is really accounted for in capital expenditure over 2 years. That's quite a bit. I mean, thank God, apparently, we sold Calvin Bassey just to cover all these kinds of projects. Well, you know, let's go back to the Kieran McGuire story that came out about, well, it kind of covered a lot of these same bases. Funny how that one works out, John Bennett. But, you know, this is here. I mean, look, if we have to fucking sell two players for record fees and make a European final every year to break even, then what the fuck is going on with the business? Because this kind of stuff is here. I mean, this is downplaying fan supporter expectations and it's covering up for where the fuck did this money go? Again, you're coming out here and telling us that you're not communicating enough to us and you've just left £11 million unexplained in the supposed capital expenditure. And then later on in the interview, you're talking about how we still have to improve disabled services. How many AGMs in a row have you guys talked about that? Yet you've got £11 million in unaccounted for capital expenditure what? Where? And then, of course, on top of that, we need 7 to 8 players for the first team coming up here in the next 18 months. We need key core squad players. And you've just told us our player trade model has only existed for 7 months. Apparently we need to sell two players on record transfer fees within 6 months of each other and make a European final to somehow break even. And even then we're not going to actually have money to spend on players. Unfucking believable. And then the temerity too, complaints about fees being reported in the media. A lot of those were coming out of the club. I mean, those were coming out of the club via their usual channels. Again, John, you clearly talked to Kieran McGuire about that story. And I mean, let's be honest here, I'm not sure Bennett would be out here if it weren't for all the shit that's gone on with Kyle Fox with this, you know, the whole American, what is it, KRF Capital or whatever. I mean, you know, and he just kind of skirts through this by saying, well, there's been speculation about the American group in particular recently. Speculation, he calls it. Speculation about the American group. That's because you were talking to them. You chose to engage with them. One of a number of groups who have come to talk to us, and I believe that will continue to happen. The bit that surprised me was when I was in Amsterdam, the noise level seemed to go up a bit about potential sellers from within the boardroom. He continues on here later. In fact, I've recently increased my position above 5%, and when the said American group did approach us, I actually took that as an opportunity to sound out most of our big investors to say, look, where are you? What do you think of this? And they rightly said, not only is there no harm in listening, and we do listen, we politely listen to a number of proposals, and that will happen again, I'm quite sure. No harm in listening is the right thing to do as well from a fiduciary point of view, and so we God damn, this is just rambling mess. So we did, we gave quite a lot of time to that situation, and we listened. See, the problem is not that you listen to this interest, and the problem, again, comes from the fact that we find out from court filings. Again, you don't communicate. You say you're going to own that, but then you bullshit your way through communication throughout this interview. You don't actually offer, well, the actual reasons, or responses, or all the information, even as you acknowledge that we deserve the information. And let's look at it. Apparently everybody deserves a look. Now KRF, it's just word salad website. KRF is a leading independent capital advisory firm providing unconflicted strategic advice on best-in-class execution. And then you go to the about us. KRF Capital is a leading global independent advisory firm. The LinkedIn. KRF Capital is a leading global independent advisory firm who provides innovative strategic advice to a diverse client base. This company was founded in 2019. Now, I'm not... I understand financial vehicles come and go. People do shit all the time. But, you know, we had a financial director not long ago who did this kind of shit. Fleece companies out of money. Sometimes you really don't have to entertain anybody's inquiries. Sometimes you can just say no. I'm not sure what all had to be looked at here past, again, that's from the Google search from KRF Capital, where, it's a word salad, stock-run Facebook page or website or LinkedIn or whatever the fuck it is. I think, had somebody like that come to me, I could have, punted them back right there. But, again, you know, Bennett throughout this whole interview keeps talking about how, look, the fans are really the owners. The fans are really the owners. By the way, please make sure you pay the RTV. Oh, wait, no. Sorry, if you did just buy RTV just to watch this interview, don't worry about it because we're going to put it up on YouTube after 2 hours of people bitching. It's just more short-sighted fucking nonsense. All this is 33 minutes that anyone who fucking watched it could have skipped. And you'd know just as much as you did going into it. Outside of the fact that, again, I mean, their contempt knows no fucking bounds because they will sit there and tell us that they need to tell us the truth and fucking continue to lie through their teeth. Speaking of potential American investors and Rangers, let's take one more quick break and come back for part three. I got some fun stuff here for you.
Okay, buckaroos, here we go again. Don't try and slide one by you once more. Don't matter how you do it. Gonna do it like we know what we're doing. Like we've been down this road once, twice before. Cause getting by on getting by is my stocking.
All right, welcome back again for second-hand news here on the 20th of September. Like I said, we're going to go back. American investors, right? There have been many before Kyle Fox tossed about with potential ties to Rangers. Of course, Bill Miller, the tow truck tycoon from my old stomping grounds down there in East Tennessee. He was a fun one. He had Jim Pritchard or whatever, Club 9, but just about as reliable and good as this KRF Capital, which again comes back to the fact of John Bennett, you don't have to talk to every... If I call you up and say I'm representing some people with a substantial financial interest, no, you don't have to listen to fucking everybody. And you obviously don't have to listen to the point where, oh, fuck that. I don't want to talk about him anymore. There was one from 2015 as well. Bennett and, of course, Murray and Park and Dave King and all them were coming back to save us. There was one who popped up right at that exact moment. And, you know, I want to, for people who weren't here for the original CrowPod or the original website, you know, all you've known is this new one since David dragged me back out during COVID, and I've slowly but surely gotten back to more regular stuff like this. But the kind of shit that we did all the time was like actual reporting work. You know, I kind of always told the other guys, like, you know, the Crow's sort of like the Deadspin of Rangers in that we do, well, reporting on the club without access, favor, or discretion, right? It got dirty sometimes, and sometimes, you know, some people deserved it. And one of those people was Robert Sarver, who is the 17-year now owner of the Phoenix Suns. He also owns Mallorca there in the Spanish leagues. But if you guys remember, back in January of 2015, when everything was kind of shaking out and it was all coming to a head, which again, John Bennett just told us we didn't have a player trading model until January of 2022. Man, that's some timeline shit right there. But 7.5 years ago, Robert Sarver, whose name's been in the news recently for, well, the NBA suspended him the other day for a year and fined him $10 million for being a racist. He'd come in, his name came out, it was I went back and found some of my notes on all this stuff. So the 4th of January 2015, Robert Sarver's name suddenly shows up in discussions about buying Rangers. And by the 5th of January, by the very next day, it was obvious that it was already too late for him. And realistically, the whole reason his name really started showing up was that, well, Jack Irvin was, of course, using Sarver's name in emails to potential buyers, investors, whatever the fuck it was, without Sarver's team even knowing. Not that Jack Irvin would ever do such a thing. But, you know, even by that point, it was too late because Park and King had already made their move. Which, well, you know, I think I called Sarver's injection into the situation a distraction, which was latched onto by just a lot of absolute throbbing rectums of people in the general RangersBirdApp.com support. Sometimes you just can't explain people why things work. But the 8th of January came back, he upped his bid. If you guys remember, to 20 million pounds and what he called 6.5 million pounds of investment, but he wanted total control of the company at 20 pence per share. And the board by this point couldn't accept the bid because, again, Park and King and all them had already beat him kind of to the corner. And it required 75% of shareholders to even begin entertaining Sarver's bid, which was already gone. I think at that point, again, he would have required the entire, like, green Easdale block of shares to even, well, have a chance in this conversation. I kind of sat there for a couple weeks. On January 20th, I just called Sarver's plan DOA because it was dead on arrival, which, again, riled the same people. They're riled when I call this bid a distraction. I mean, how could the bid of a man with net worth of $500 million be a distraction? Because it was, because it didn't fucking matter at that point. For some reason, and again, I'm just going off notes I found in the notebook here, but for some reason on February 4th, some other site came back on and said Sarver's bid still in play and had been improved and all this other shit. Which, again, you know, look, second-hand news, right? The whole point of the show is I try to bring a little bit of my many, many years of experience in journalism back out here to the front to try to, well, at least explain some stuff. And I remember, like, going back to this, I had no idea where the fuck this one came from. I didn't write down what site. I have an idea of who I think did it. But I don't want to get in anybody's shit over 7 years later. But of course, what I did then was just call Sarver's people, who you know, confirmed, well, no, that wasn't at all the case. And of course, what ended up happening was Sarver faded into the background because, well, as I said, his bid was a distraction and dead on arrival. And he comes back I mean, the next time I have my football season, him and Steve Nash by Majorca the next January for roughly about the same amount of cash and initial investment that was being bandied about, the 20 million pounds and about 6.5 million for investment. And by June of 2017, Majorca had gone to the third tier of Spanish football. They're kind of in a Norwich position now, from what I can tell. I mean, look, my interactions with La Liga, well, pretty much are, oh shit, it's on ESPN Plus. Yeah, fuck it, I'll watch some football for a little while. Bring this up though, of course. Like I said, Robert Sarver's been in the news recently. I think it's important here when John Bennett says that we'll talk to any investor that, you know, there are some people that you don't need to talk to, and some of these stories have gone back to that time. And of course, yeah, look, it doesn't matter how much money some people have; they shouldn't fucking be around, right? And it took until in 2019 there was a first story. From Kevin Arnovitz. This is the first ESPN story. And this story all talked about was how dysfunctionally run the Phoenix Suns organization was. And it was, I mean, it was laughable at times. The amount of how much Sarver wanted his hands on stuff, how much his wife was involved in stuff. I mean, it was fucking crazy. But if you read through the cracks there, especially with a lot of the reporting that's come out since, it was really like, you're not getting to the whole story here. And it wasn't until, Baxter Holmes, who's been working on this now for ESPN for about a year, he came out with a story, November 4th of 2021, NBA launches investigation into Sarver over racism and sexism charges after Baxter Holmes released a story that detailed racism and sexism charges. I mean, like, one of the great quotes after a loss, Suns majority owner Robert Sarver entered the coach's locker room. He's talking with Earl Watson. This is his third game in charge of the Phoenix Suns. This is back in 2016, I would say. So just over a year after his interest in Rangers. Sarver comes in, starts talking, he goes, you know, why does Draymond Green, of course, the Golden State Warriors center forward, why does Draymond Green get to run up and down the court and say N-word? Sarver, who is white, allegedly said, repeating the N-word several times in a row. You can't say that, Watson, who is black and Hispanic, told Sarver. Why? Sarver replied. Draymond Green says N-word. You can't fucking say that, Watson said again. ESPN... ended up talking about more than 70 employees who all painted this picture. It was pretty fucking clear. One Suns co-owner. Again, this would have been somebody who was working with Sarver at the time that he was trying to take over Rangers, allegedly. Said the level of misogyny and racism is beyond the pale. It's embarrassing as an owner. One other former Suns executive, a basketball side executive, said there's literally nothing you could tell me about him from a misogynistic or race standpoint that would surprise me. Sarver, of course, you know, when this first news story came out, he came out through his lawyers and you know, your typical quote you expect. I'd never call anyone or any group of people the N-word or refer to anyone or any group of people by the N-word, either verbally or in writing. I don't use that word. Of course, later in the statement, Sarver acknowledged using the word many years ago. There's already cracks appearing in this story before the NBA even opens its investigation. And of course, you know, the statements kept coming back like that. Penny Sarver, who's his wife, you know, not that we as Rangers fans know anything about, board members' wives getting on social media and, you know, anyway, leave that one there. But she actually reached out to former employees in the organization right after the story broke out. This is Penny Sarver, one message began. I know a lot of bridges were burned between you and Robert, and you are very bitter. I want to remind you that real lives are at stake here. Later in the message, but please put your hatred aside and realize the hurt you are causing by spreading lies and fabrications. Is your time in the spotlight that important? If something happens to one of my children, I will hold you and Earl Watson personally responsible. Think about your own child for a second and imagine the tables turned. This was the messaging, of course, that came out of the Sarver camp. Again, this is a guy who wanted to own Rangers, and a lot of people would have been happy. And, the NBA opens its investigation based solely on the back of the ESPN report. And it concluded here within the past week with, the suspension of Sarver for a year and fining him $10 million. Now, according to the reporting, he said the N-word in that Draymond Green interaction five times. So apparently it's $2 million per N-word in 1 year. You should be kicked out, right? The NBA has gone through this with Donald Sterling before. And the difference, of course, being that Sterling, there were recordings. But, of course, we now live in a society where people being recorded doing this stuff doesn't really matter. Which I think was part of Sarver's plan here, was just to sit back and know that, it isn't going to matter. Look, you can grab him by the pussy and still be elected president, right? Plus, God knows all the other shit that motherfucker said. So having it recorded doesn't really matter anymore. I think Don Sterling just happened to be, everybody was sick of him anyway. People, though, you had LeBron James, of course, most visible basketball player in the world. You had Chris Paul, who was the head of the players union and current Phoenix Suns point guard, come out saying that this isn't enough. The problem is Adam Silver, which I don't think people, Neil Doncaster works for one club, right? I mean, we know that, we accept that. The commissioner of the National Basketball Association, like the commissioner of all the sports leagues over here, works for the owners. And the idea of throwing one owner under the bus for this kind of shit probably doesn't go over too well, because I think there's a lot of owners out there in similar positions going, oh, fuck, if this is what gets you removed, well, that might not bode well for me. And so Sarver again is here to exercise, do things in their best interests. Now, since then, you've had the minority owner for the Suns call for his resignation. You want people out. I still think Sarver's trying to play the long game here and sit and hope that people just forget about it, because people always forget about stuff. It doesn't really matter what you do. People just kind of, goes away. It's a philosophy I think John Bennett's trying to put into place right now. But, like I said, I wanted to come back to some stuff from the earlier days of the Crow. Because we're coming up on 10 years here. Well, I mean, the website itself is already more than 10 years old. The podcast, the Crow Pod, hits 10 years here in a couple months. And, again, for people who maybe weren't around back then, this is the kind of stuff that we worked on. We did some actual news. And again, that's the show, Secondhand News. I mean, I do still try to source some information, source some material. I do some reporting every once in a while and bring it to you guys here on the shows. But I think it's important to know that is, my general mindset in bringing this kind of information, these kind of stories to you guys, whether it be talking about the problems within the club or talking about, the stuff going back with Robert Sarver 7 years ago that I was reporting out. It's still in my ethos. It's still how I go about building these kind of things. So this week, speaking of good reporting this week, coming up, we've got a new Rangers from Sea to Shining Sea with me and Gary Havlin. Again, going back, talking about Winnipeg 1954. We had cut the show previously, but we both kind of thought we could do it better. And, it's me and Gary still kind of feeling this out as he's come back for the shows, trying to figure out the best way to go about building them. But that will be here, I think, Wednesday night or early Thursday. There will be a new Watergate at 50 to help you get through the international break. Of course, available on the Crow Pod and on Heart and Hand. And there is a new Crow Pod, regular Crow Pod, coming for you Friday. Todd is still banished to Italy in his horrible little holiday village he's in over there. It's got to be terrible for him, sitting there on the coast of a sea and drinking wine and eating pasta all day. It's one of the worst punishments we've ever handed out here at the Crow Pod. But Peter Ewart's coming back to join me and David on Friday. Of course, David COVID stricken. He's got nothing better to do anyway. So we will be back with more programming. Again, thank you all. Thank you for your support. We are giving away some more stuff here from the Famous at the end of the month. You got 10 days left. Hop on in, go down to the show notes there, hit that Buy Me a Coffee link, or just, you can visit support.thecopelandroad.org. Give us a hand, you go into the pot. We've already picked one winner for this month. I'm probably going to pick two more. So we got that coming up as well. Thanks again, we'll talk to you soon.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
I mean, you can't even fucking serious at all.